The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. Good morning. It is the 8 o'clock hour unfolding before you. Appreciate it. We're going to have some interesting stuff this hour. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, State Senator Kelly Hancock will join us, as he has done a ton of times on a ton of issues. And I'm sure we'll talk about some stuff in the news. But we're going to talk about his life, a life that was endangered of late by a kidney disease that, and you know how that path goes. You got to have a transplant, got to have a fitting donor. And they found one. And it was his son-in-law. And that surgery was successful. So the good senator and our good friend will tell us about that at 8:35. But right now, a gentleman is going to tell us about his day yesterday and the path that got us to this shameful, shameful moment in Dallas city government. It is a liberally run city. I know that. We're not going to turn Dallas into a conservative enclave. We can work on maybe upending Clay Jenkins. That would be nice. We can get more conservatives on council. That would be nice. It's a big uphill climb. And as I said all day yesterday, I don't expect liberal members of the Dallas City Council to become pro-life like me. But I do expect them to have respect for the law. And in post-Roe v. Wade America, the state of Texas and other states that wish to do so can take some steps to protect the unborn. Now, this is kryptonite to the left. And so in Austin, in Denton, and they're working on it in San Antonio, and now, yesterday, in Dallas, a thing passes with a sick, sick acronym, the GRACE Act, guarding the right to abortion care for everyone. It's essentially city governments gathering and saying, we're not going to pay attention to that. We're not going to devote resources to it, not going to pay attention to it, not going to investigate it, not going to devote police attention to it. So what does that mean, and what will the effects be? And Mayor Johnson, and I've done some outreach to him. We're going to have some conversations. I like the mayor. I don't think the mayor is a bug-eyed pro-choicer. Not at all. Not at all. But his is a complicated calculus, trying to be a conservative Democrat running a staunchly leftist city. And it was staunch leftism from Adam Bazaldua and others on council. He's got his 10-year-old. What, how old is the kid? Is kid 10? God love her. Beautiful little girl. When you have your child at a pro-abort rally, there's just something so perverse about that. It's like, honey, do you know what you're doing? Do you know what that stupid pin that your mom and dad put on you means? They're like, oh, my daughter's rights. Well, your daughter's rights to kill her baby? Thank God they didn't do that to you. It's so weird. It's so strange. So yesterday was the GRACE Act, so-called, and the one vote against it was 10th District Northeast Dallas City Councilman Adam Magoo, who joins us. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
I'm all right. Good morning to you, Mark.
So before we even get to the vote, can you tell me about the weirdness of Tuesday night? Because it was going to be one of those sessions, as often happens, where people show up on both sides of an issue and address the council. Now, our producer here and our mutual friend, Rhonda K. Moreland, is very, very plugged into those causes and was ready to mobilize herself and others to come on down and be part of a big back and forth about the GRACE Act. And then on Tuesday night, the city secretary sends out an email to everybody and says, man, we're not going to do that. Everybody wave off. Everybody, go back to your original plans. Tell me what happened there, because then on Wednesday morning, guess what? The debate was back on.
Yeah, so even how this got here in the first place, it was a special called meeting. It was put on the very first agenda coming back out of the council recess. And, as I see it, I put forth an issue that we need to defer the item, which is what you do when you haven't had enough discussion on a particular issue. We hadn't talked about the legal implications. We hadn't talked about the the impact of our law enforcement officers having to potentially violate their oath by not following state law and the Constitution. And so I deferred the item, which is a normal rule process to go through. Usually, if a council member has an issue with that, they would call me up. They would say, hey, look, we have the votes. They need a two-third majority to overrule that deferment. And we'd say, okay, let's put it back on the agenda and let's go forward. But nobody said a word. It wasn't until really I got there that morning and saw a couple people wearing T-shirts and knew that there was time for some theater that I realized, okay, they're gonna make a move on this. And so they used an administrative process to overrule our rules and to change the rules and to go ahead and bring the item up. And so many people that would have liked to be involved in this discussion were precluded either from the email from the city secretary's office or just the way the process played out. And so a lot of the debate was just not able to be had.
So you had a reason to believe that your pretty routine request to defer this was going to be honored and it would just not be on the agenda. And then all of a sudden, ding, 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 you show up and you've got like a four or so members of council wearing nifty Bans, B-A-N-S, off my body shirts. And you could tell that the Grace Act push was on. So people did get to speak. People did go to the microphones. How did that work out?
Well, it was somewhat of an unorganized cluster. And again, not knowing if they were going to allow any speakers at all, when they put the item back on, the city secretary's office rushed to get notice out, I guess, some of the folks. I don't know the underworkings of how that panned out, but they did come up with a couple lists and reached out to a few people that had signed up in advance. And so there was some speaking, but even that part, because of the numbers, it was restricted to only 1 minute apiece. So the normal 3 minutes weren't allowed. And so you just had, you know, really enough time to say who you are and if you're for or against it and not much else.
So this was the picture of a fait accompli, really, in Dallas. It was going to pass. This was a matter of principle to you. And let me dig a little deeper on that. Tell me if I'm wrong. I don't believe you are a big, ardent, social conservative pro-lifer, I don't think. I think you are driven by sort of rule of law that says, hey, this is on the books, and for us to willfully turn a blind eye is just weird. It may be illegal, and we may be creating a legal nightmare for ourselves. I mean, don't let me put words in your mouth. What was the basis of your intent all along to vote no on the Grace Act?
Well, let's start there. I think we all need grace, certainly even after the issues of yesterday and what we're all going through right now. But I'm pro-life. I have my beliefs, my belief system. I have my faith that is very strong in our life. And I've had personal experiences on all sides of this that have driven me to that place. And again, as most people, it's as younger, different time periods in your life, you kind of evolve in some of your beliefs. But I'm certainly a strong pro-life belief. And it is. When you see something like this coming forward, I really recognize this even more sitting through it yesterday. It just felt more and more negative. I was getting lower and lower hearing the discussions. And again, people are very, very strongly opinionated, obviously, on all issues on both sides of this thing. But the part that bothers me the most is what I ended up saying at the end yesterday is there's just a total disregard for human life. Now, I get people debate on when it starts. And, you know, I had a very good conversation with a strong faith person that through their leadership and their rabbinic teaches say, you know, look, life does not start until that first breath. And that's what they believe. And so my worldview is different. And I get that. But can we also agree that it's still different? It's a different process than just having a something removed or a skin cancer removed or something else, that it has a life changing impact when you're talking about human life, which is what we're dealing with. And I couldn't even get the council to recognize that to put that in the resolution.
Well no, okay. Okay, and which it is. It's not some big – in fact, in a minute we'll get to what it does and what it doesn't do. Since there was precisely zero chance of turning staunch pro-abort Adam Bazaldúa and his henchmen and women on council into getting them to have regard for human life. That wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't. I mean, God bless you for trying. What I spent all day yesterday saying is, look, guys, be pro-choice. I'm not trying to convert you on this deep emotional, you know, personal issue. I'm trying to get our city to obey the law. Can't we all get together? I mean, listen, I mean, what if a city said, hate crimes, don't care, not going to pay attention? What if a city said, child abuse, don't care, not going to enforce it? I know those are absurd, extreme examples, but it's the same concept. A city just turning a willful blind eye to laws that it just decides to ignore. Cities can't do that. It's rogue. It's lawless. And yet they did it. So let's talk about what it does. It is ceremonial. It's kind of like spouting off. But what does it prevent the Dallas police from, if somebody calls and says, hey, I think somebody's got like a backroom abortion clinic over, you know, by Fair Park. Nothing we can do about it. What does the Grace Act actually do?
Well, I mean, part of that, if you're able to listen to some of the debate that our Chief Garcia was asked those questions, and some of it is to be determined. You know, they don't know exactly. It is supposed to restrict the keeping of records and how the police department prioritizes those complaints. But we don't know yet. I mean, and that's the issue. You said it correctly. We can't have, you know, the basic fundamental of our city government is to keep our communities and our people safe. And you have to follow the law. They take an oath to honor the Constitution and follow the law. And now we're saying, hey, follow the law, just not this one. And, you know, whether you agree with it or not, the Dobbs opinion is very clear that the state has the authority and to make the laws. And you're telling our police officers that now you're not supposed to follow the law that you're given. That just sets up for all sorts of problems.
So what is City Councilman Adam Magoo with us, District 10, Northeast Dallas, the only no vote against this infernal Grace Act? What has the landscape been in the weeks since Roe v. Wade was felled? I mean, Dallas had a smattering of abortion clinics. Are they all closed, like right now?
To my knowledge, I'm only based on some of the articles I've read. There are some people that are shutting down operations. Some are moving. Some are creating workarounds. Mm-hmm. But we're still kind of reading what's going on there.
Gotcha. And a lot of it is a very, you know, a lot of moving pieces to the puzzle to be sure, as everybody figures out what they can and cannot get away with. So along comes the perversely titled Grace Act, designed it. I'm going to phrase this. What might we expect? I mean, I said a moment ago, we don't expect somebody necessarily to, you know, set up a pop-up clinic, on some street corner or something. Or do we think that might happen? And what kind of resourcefulness might these folks display, especially when they know they're operating in a city, turning a willful blind eye?
Yeah, no, I don't. You know, we talk about sanctuary cities, and it seems like that's what this is intended to do, is to try to create sort of a cloud of, hey, we know this is the law, but you can violate it here. And I don't believe that's going to be what happens. I don't believe that our law enforcement are going to be able to turn their heads away from valid complaints and issues that are coming forward and recognition that people's lives are being impacted in all sorts of ways. So you can't, I don't believe that's going to happen, but you just don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know where this is going.
And you would like to have your head hit the pillow at night saying, the city in which I live is going to enforce the laws. Some of those laws may be things I agree with. Some of those laws may be things I don't agree with. But the city where I live, for those who live in Dallas, at least for those who live in any city, should be able to say, you know what? If a law hits the books, a city will enforce it, because it is a lawless, dystopian world when members of city council just essentially say, we're not going to pay attention to this. Final 60 seconds. Eric Johnson may be my favorite Democrat, and that's a short list. but I love the guy. We've had a lot of dialogue, and we need to have some now, because I know he was in a tough spot. Not asking you to channel somebody else. Was his yes vote on this surprising, or did you think it's kind of what the guy has to do in order to avoid getting torched and never be able to do anything working? And just what's your thought on the Mayor Johnson yes vote?
I mean, I it's hard to tell. I think he's trying to do the best he can to represent this city and also to keep things safe. He's been really strong on public safety, and I think he's trying to navigate these waters. And you know, I think he does value human life. I think he absolutely sees, and he's a smart guy. So he knows he knows what all's going on. I think he's just trying to get through this and lead the city. And I just feel like we've got to be more clear on some of these issues, understanding that they are complex things, but we're gonna stand up where we need to stand up.
Well, thank you for doing it. I deeply appreciate it. I know your constituents do there in the Northeast Dallas District 10 there. Adam Magoo, appreciate it very, very much. Thanks, and we'll talk again soon, I know.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, man. City Councilman Adam Magoo. About the mayor's vote, think of it this way, and this is something I've got to, think about a lot, and I do. There's a difference between talk show life, between talk show guys and elected officials. I can spout off. It's a huge luxury, a huge latitude, and I love it every day. I can spout off every large and small thing in my heart and on my mind. And you know what? Some of you may love it. Some of you may not. But the show is going to be pretty great every day. when you love me, it's great. When you're driven crazy by me, it's great. We're having a great time and there's goodwill all around, blah, blah, blah. So let's say Mayor Johnson, because again, we will have some conversations about this. Let's say he does exactly what I wanted him to do, which is to say, look, many of you may be pro-choice. I'm not. But I'm not asking you. This is not about abortion rights. This vote is not about abortion rights. It's about whether our city is going to be lawless. It's about whether our city is going to obey the law. And that answer always needs to be yes. So I'm voting no on the Grace Act. Right? Easy to say, hard to do. At the moment at which he does that, I guess maybe what? He burns every bridge with every other member of council on every other thing he's trying to do? Probably. Because that's how petty and vindictive these people can be. So anyway, ain't nothing simple. 826.
An empty apartment, don't feel like
the great John Conley.
On the backside of 30.
1979.
The short side of time.
Backside of 30.
Back on.
He was 33 at the time. Now John's on the backside of 70, almost at the front porch of 80. He's 76 years old today. Born this date 76 years ago in Versailles, Kentucky. All righty, into the newsroom we go, and then on to the phones for our chat with State Senator Kelly Hancock. Speaking of longevity, he's bought himself a few more years with a kidney transplant. How'd that go? We'll ask him about that and probably some stuff in the news next. It's 8:32. Mark Davis, here's Gordon in the newsroom. So I don't know how many times over the years that I've said these words. Let's go to the phones and say hi to State Senator Kelly Hancock, State Senator for District 9. Said that a bunch of times. But on today's program, we are pleased to do so to talk about some stuff that he's been going through of late. I'm trying to remember the day a few weeks ago where Kelly Hancock was in the news, and the news was that a kidney disorder that was quite serious was something that needed attention, and the only kind of attention is through a kidney transplant, which he was able to get with a matching kidney coming from his son-in-law. So holy cow, how did this all roll out? What a pleasure, and I do mean a particular pleasure, to say hi to Kelly Hancock. Welcome, sir. How you doing?
Yeah, good morning, Mark. It's great to be with you.
It is great to have you here. And so let's kind of go chronologically. What is Berger's disease? B-E-R-G-E-R. What is it?
Yeah. Well, that's how I pronounce it first. I think it's actually pronounced Berger disease.
Oh, good. I'm a beef-loving man. Sorry about that. The French.
I haven't had any meat in 6 years, but I am a beef-loving man.
Oh, is that the price we pay?
So, the name is IgA nephropathy, and, I was actually diagnosed with it 31 years ago, right after Chloe, our oldest child, was born. So, we were young, and, I had some issues following playing racquetball with one of our customers, and, immediately knew something was up. Long story short, went through a lot of different testing. Actually had a biopsy, which you've got to do in a different manner because your kidneys are attached to your lungs, so they kind of move when you breathe. So you've got to taken 3 inches of that kidney out in order to properly diagnose it, which is really the only way you can, at that time, fully diagnose IgA nephropathy. Mm-hmm. And it's a very rare disease. It's, you know, it's not hereditary. I just had a missing gene, and so it was a immune deficient disorder. And at the time, you know, it's very rare. In fact, I had never heard of anybody else having it in 30 years until about 6 weeks ago. And a lady in my wife's Bible study class, her son-in-law came down with it, and he immediately went on dialysis. And then since the story broke, I had a father from Colorado call me, whose son, who plays at University of Mississippi football, called, and his son was diagnosed with it. And so, you know, since that segment aired, I've been able to, you know, share and encourage some people. And, you know, it was, as a young couple, it was scary when the doctor brings you in and you've got a, you know, young child at home, and they tell you, well, it could be 2 days, 2 months, 2 years. This disease just kind of does what it wants to do. And, you know, initially I was told I can't run more than 2 miles at a moderate pace. It was, you know, it was a time we, you know, went to God and stuck with our faith and just had to trust him.
And so through your, so this is your late 20s, through your 30s, through your 40s, and I guess even into your 50s, because you're about, we're 58 now, right?
Yes,
this
yep.
was something you were just kind of living with, not the kind of thing you walk around wearing a sandwich board or talking about every other day. It just seemed like something you were going to live with. So at what point did it become clear that kidney function was headed south and it was time to have, you know, the difficult conversations about a transplant?
Right. And so, you know, I knew from the very start that because of my faith, I wanted to live a life that people really didn't notice. And, you know, I went on to run 6 marathons and really lived a normal life. And people didn't know because I wanted to tell a story when we got to the end. And he allowed us to tell that the way I really wanted to. Which was just talking about his sufficiency through all of this, never knowing when you were going to wake up and I would be where I am at the point I needed one. Mm-hmm. That time came. And so what happened is I initially started testing every 2 years, then it became every year, then it became every 6 months, then it became every month. And so as the disease worsens, then it actually speeds up getting worse, if that makes sense.
Sure.
And so 6 years ago, when I was going in on a monthly basis, the doctor said, okay, you need to talk to your family. And so 6 years ago, because you're going to be on dialysis in a year to 2 years. So 6 years ago, I got the family together. We had a very difficult conversation, as you can imagine, at that time. And I just shared with them, look, you know, it's gotten to the point. And, you know, my family knew, not many people other than my family knew I had it. And, it's gotten to that point that they say I'm going to be on dialysis in a year or two if I don't get a transplant. I became even more disciplined in my diet, avoiding proteins and potassium and phosphorus, things the kidneys typically function.
Mm-hmm.
And then following this, and I knew during this session because during this, and so I made it 6 years when I was told I had a year to two.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this session I could tell. I mean, I would have gout in my feet on numerous occasions because of the toxins building up in there. And, you know, I didn't want anybody to know, so I just worked.
Fought through it.
Through that. Yeah. And then when I got home, tested, and then immediately he calls me and says, I need you to come back and test again. And that's when, Mark, I just knew because you got to be bad.
Yep.
Your kidneys have to suck before you can
there, there's bad. Exactly. So I know I watch too much TV and too many movies, but the moment it is clear you need a kidney transplant, what happens? I guess there's a list. What is that? How do you get on it? And what do they tell you is going to happen?
Yeah. And Mark, that's really one of the reasons we want exposure. And so there is a list. In fact, there's over 100,000 people that are on that list today.
Mm-hmm.
And typically in a year, you will have, you know, 25,000 transplant surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a much greater need for kidneys than we have kidneys available. And so that's part of the story we want to let people know is that is an important thing that you can do because, frankly, when you're deceased, you don't need your kidneys.
Yeah.
Somebody might.
Scientifically
right?
true. So what do you want people to do? What can we do?
Well, we can register. I mean, you can register when you get your driver's license. You can go to Donate Life .org now and register. And so those are things that can be done to help the situation. And so, you know, that's kind of what we want to talk about as well, is our journey as we share this message, because we've learned so much about it.
So, quick question. So what we're asking, obviously, listen, I'm an organ donor. I'm a driver's license, always have been. I don't need them. Is that what we're, I mean, obviously, that's what we're talking about, is be an organ donor. But you wound up getting and needing a donor from a living person, not just any living person, your son-in-law, Greg. So let's just a little bit more, because I'm just fascinated by the list and how this works.
Sure.
First, do you make just a – do you sort, are there just like glances at the dinner table of who might be the same blood type and how this might go? I mean, how is the first destination people you are blood related to?
Well, I did ask him before I said he could marry my daughter, what his blood type was.
Exactly.
I'm kidding.
As we all
I'm
should. No, I know. Gotcha.
No, not at all. But so what you do is, once your kidneys get bad enough, then your doctor has to submit a form to the foundation. Then you go through testing. That test, and there's two regions. So Dallas is one region, and they're 50-mile regions. Fort Worth is another. So I registered in both regions, which is a process on my side, and that took from 7:30 in the morning to 4:30 at both times. So, and I don't know how many vials of blood hundreds of vials of blood since January. And so I registered in January. Finding an opportunity when all your family's together, when they're married now with kids, is difficult. But so I ended up sharing with my family Friday after Thanksgiving. We were all together, and I shared with them, look, here's, I've got to register. To avoid dialysis, I'm going to need a living donor. And, I guess this is certainly a lesson that God knows I'm hard-headed and taught me. I'm stubbornly independent. Mm-hmm. But when you need a live organ, you can't be real independent.
Can't be shy.
And No, so he's taught me that we need each other. And in a very remarkable way, and I needed somebody. Otherwise, I was going to be on dialysis, which is, not something I wanted to go on. And so I had 8 different family members test. Yeah. Both of my daughters actually were, my kids were a match, but my daughters had brand new babies.
Yeah.
And so, turns out that my son-in-law, Greg Cox, ended up being a match. In fact, they told him, Mark, that he was as good a match as one of my own kids.
And let's tell everybody, we all have 2 kidneys. So anybody can do this, but then you've only got one, and that's not a small thing. So this is, it is a sacrifice. So
Definitely.
I mean, so when was that? So when was the transplant surgery?
So I had transplant surgery on July 13th. I was supposed to have it on June 9th. Mm-hmm. I got sick a week and a half before. I had to cancel it. Supposed to have it on June 29th.
Hey.
COVID testing. They said I was positive at noon the day before we were to go in, which was a very difficult day. That the PCR, I was positive. Canceled that one. So we ended up having surgery on July 13th. Mark, he went home on the 14th. I went home on the 15th. Now, that's not normal, but he was in good shape beforehand. I was in good shape beforehand, which makes a huge difference. He went back to work in 2 weeks.
Wow.
Now, and what happens is immediately when I got his kidney, all of my function improved significantly, because my kidney function was down to 10% or below.
I'll bet you're a new man.
The one I got from him was at least 40%, if not 50%, which was something I haven't seen in 30 years.
That's so awesome.
And what happens with his one kidney, it will actually elevate to the point of operating, they said, to 100.
That's awesome. So again, God's systems are great. He now gets this bionic kidney because the one notices, I got to step up because there's only one of me. Oh my goodness!
Exactly.
Well, listen, a last thing. So you're here, you're alive. Greg is fine. You're fine. It's all we want. What do you want people to do? Just become an organ donor. And I guess if somebody you love asks you, look, pray about it, think about it, and donate.
Right,
if you can.
Recognize that yes, it is a huge sacrifice.
Yep.
But your life actually returns to normal. And like I said, he was home the day after. Yes, we were both in great pain for a period of time. It's a major surgery.
Yeah.
But within 2 weeks, he was back at work. And then that kidney is going to continue to build and get better and better. And so, you know, God did make us extremely unique, especially when it comes to the kidney. But also, you know, on your driver's license, that, you know, just to donate,
yep,
because there is such a need out there, Mark. And we just need people to be aware of it and know that, look, this is, it's not a simple surgery, but it's a common surgery nowadays. And we can help a lot of people.
What a living testament you are to that. It just adds to the list of ways in which you, sir, are valuable. I am so proud to be your friend and so glad to talk to you about it. God bless you. My best to Greg and the family. And next time, let's talk about 14 crazy things going on in Texas, shall we?
Perfect. God bless, Mark.
State Senator Kelly Hancock, District 9, alive and kicking. 852. We got a birthday to close out the hour. The great Eric Carmen out front of the Raspberries in 1972. Go all the way. These guys were great. Go all the way. Let's pretend. I want to be with you. Overnight sensation. Never knew how to be. Obviously, he would come back later and do ballads like All by Myself, and that's great. Give me some raspberries on Eric Carmen. Give me some raspberries. All right, buddy. There you go. The great Eric Carmen is 73. We'll let him take us out into the 9 o'clock hour. I got stuff I haven't even brought up yet. So we'll see how that works out. We have a school district that thinks it's found a compromise on whether your kid should have a cell phone on them. The no answer is because the screens are destroying education. The yes answer is, should evil strike your school, don't you want your kid to have a cell phone? So we'll talk about that. More on the aftermath of the raid to end all raids. And a number of other items in our 9 o'clock hour. Mark Davis, 660 AM The Answer. Stick around.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.